Welcome to Washington Today for Monday, November 14th, 2022. I'm Gary Sterikoff. Thanks a lot for listening this afternoon. Here are today's headlines. President Joe Biden said that there is, quote, no need for a new Cold War between the U.S. and China. He spoke to reporters following a three-hour meeting earlier today with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Indonesia. President Biden added that he didn't think that a Chinese invasion of Taiwan was imminent. We'll hear more about what he said coming up. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky visited the newly liberated city of Kherson on Monday and promised the victory would serve as the beginning of the end for the war against Russia. President Zelensky walked the streets in the southern Ukrainian city, taking photos with soldiers and praising them for fighting against Russia. The Ukrainian leader also said he was seeking peace, but added that he would have to secure that peace for his whole country. Congress returned for legislative work today for the first time since the midterm elections. And South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham and at least four other senators are saying that their caucus should delay its leadership elections that are set for Wednesday. In a tweet, Senator Graham wrote, quote, in light of the Georgia Senate runoff, it would be appropriate to delay Senate leadership elections until we know who is in the Senate Republican conference. I totally agree with Senator Cruz that to do otherwise would be disrespectful to Herschel Walker. More about the current state of the House and Senate is coming up. And the Supreme Court has cleared the way for the House January 6th committee to access the phone records of Arizona Republican Party Chair Kelly Ward. She and her husband Michael were among a group of 11 Arizonans who signed a fake election certificate purporting to show that former President Trump won the state in the 2020 presidential election. The subpoena asked cellular company T-Mobile USA to release Kelly Ward's call records from November 1st, 2020 through January 31st, 2021, and only asked for times and durations of calls when she served as a Trump elector. The decision comes following a district court and a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling against Kelly Ward. She argues the subpoena was too intrusive and violated her First Amendment rights. We begin in Bali, Indonesia, where President Joe Biden said that there's, quote, no need for a new Cold War between the U.S. and China. He spoke to reporters following a three-hour meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Indonesia. The two men are in Bali for the G20 summit. They shook hands at the beginning of the meeting and smiled and posed for photographs in a room with both the American and Chinese flags. Here's the president speaking to reporters after the meeting.
You met with President Xi and you met with him face-to-face after he had unquestionably consolidated his power at home. So now that you've met with him face-to-face, how do you assess his sort of posture towards the United States now? And did you find him personally to be more confrontational or more conciliatory and willing to compromise?
Neither and yes.
Can you elaborate?
I didn't find him more confrontational or more conciliatory. I found him the way he's always been, direct and straightforward. And do I think he's willing to compromise on various issues? Yes. I think he understands that. I think, how can I say this tactfully? I think the election held in the United States, which still leaves a little bit uncertain, has sent a very strong message around the world that the United States is ready to play. United States is the Republicans who survived, along with the Democrats, are of the view that we're going to stay fully engaged in the world and that we, in fact, know what we're about. And so I don't get any sense that there's a more or less confrontation. We were very blunt with one another about places where we disagreed or where we were uncertain of each other's position, and we agreed we'd set up, as we did, mechanisms whereby we would meet in detail with the key people in each of our administrations to discuss how we could resolve them. Or if they weren't resolved, on what basis were they not resolved?
Although they have spoken five times by video conference, this was the first face-to-face meeting between President Biden and President Xi. And according to a White House statement, the two, quote, underscored their opposition to the use or threat of use of nuclear weapons in Ukraine. And in that news conference after the meeting, President Biden told reporters about their conversation. They talked about North Korea, Beijing's tensions with Taiwan, and human rights. President Biden added that he didn't think a Chinese invasion of Taiwan was imminent, but that U.S. policy towards Taiwan remains the same.
The one China policy, our one China policy, has not changed, We oppose unilateral change in the status quo by either side, and we're committed to maintaining the peace and stability in the Taiwan Straits.
In a statement after the meeting, Beijing's Ministry of Foreign Affairs said the meeting was, quote, in-depth, candid, and constructive. Congress has returned for legislative work for the first time since the midterm elections. Republican Rudy Yacham, who was elected last week to serve out the remainder of the late Indiana Republican Congresswoman Jackie Walorski's term, was sworn in today. Incoming House members are also on the Hill for orientation sessions for the start of the new Congress in January. The Senate also came back to continue work on judicial nominations. And here's Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer in his leader time remarks. He talks about the election results and the Democrats holding on to the majority.
Madam President, last Tuesday, Americans made their voices heard in one of the most remarkable midterm elections in modern history. With our democracy at stake, with our fundamental liberties on the line, and with a clear choice between moving America forward or holding it back, the American people spoke loud and clear. Democrats will retain the majority in the Senate. And House Democrats, under the leadership of Speaker Pelosi, defied precedent and remain within striking distance of defending their majority as well. The election was a great win for the Democratic Party, but more importantly, a great win for the American people. And let me say this. Two things happened, Madam President, in the last 2 years. First, this Senate and this Congress passed a huge agenda, the most comprehensive agenda affecting and helping American families that has occurred in decades. Second, Democrats won the elections here in the Senate and many in the House. Those two statements are directly related. Because Democrats had a strong agenda here and did things for the American people, we won. And despite the negativity and divisiveness, the threats of violence, and even the violence itself that occurred with MAGA Republicanism dominating the country, the American people stepped back from the precipice and chose progress and getting things done rather than the voices of divisiveness, nastiness, and lack of complete truth and honor. So those two things are definitely related.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's leader time remarks earlier today. During his leader time remarks, Republican leader Mitch McConnell also spoke about the midterm election results.
And Americans are not especially closely divided about whether they want President Biden to keep governing like he has been or actually change course. At this point in their presidencies, every one of the last 13 presidents dating back to Truman had higher approval ratings than the Biden administration. One state where Democrats' policy failures have hit especially hard is the state of Georgia. Georgia families have seen cumulative inflation of 14.7% since January of 2021. Both of their senators cast a deciding vote to rubber stamp the spending that made that happen. Now households in the Peach State are paying a hidden Democratic inflation tax that adds up to thousands of extra dollars per year. The nationwide breakdown in law and order has hit Georgia hard as well. The city of Atlanta now has per capita rates of homicide and assault that are even actually worse than Chicago. And the people of Georgia saw their state attacked, called racist, called Jim Crow 2.0, by the sitting president of the United States, and boycotted by major corporations over a voting law that just facilitated, listen to this, historic ballot access, record turnout, and low wait times for Georgia voters. So where do Georgia taxpayers and small businesses go to get their money back after the liberal smear campaign that led to the boycotts? But the day after the election, Madam President, President Biden took to the podium and triumphantly promised that he plans to learn no lessons and change nothing at all. Here was the quote, "I'm not going to change the direction," end quote. 13+% inflation over 2 years. Historic levels of dissatisfaction at America's kitchen tables. And President Biden says he'll keep doing precisely what he has been doing. More inflation, more crime, more chaos, more open borders. If Washington Democrats do not want to pivot to sanity and common sense, if they will not help us address the ways their policies are hurting families, they will encounter stiff resistance from the sizable Senate Republican conference that half the country is elected to be their voice, to be their champions, to fight for them.
Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell during his leader time remarks earlier today. And according to Politico, Senator McConnell is confident in his reelection as the Republican leader, but there have been several Senate Republicans who have called for a delay in leadership elections. Those include Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Marco Rubio of Florida, Josh Hawley of Missouri, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, and Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz.
Let me start off by saying I am so pissed off I cannot even see straight. We had an extraordinary opportunity. We had a generational opportunity. This should have been a fundamental landslide election. We should have won the House and the Senate. We should have a 30, 40, 50 vote majority in the House. We should have 53, 54, 55 Republicans in the Senate. And instead, holy crap, the Democrats keep the Senate. Worse than that, the Democrats potentially grow their majority in the Senate. Worse than that, yes, we take the House, but at best, we're going to take the House with a couple of seats. Maybe. There is an outside chance we lose the House. I don't think we will. I think the numbers are enough that we will hold on to the House, but it's going to be a majority of 219, 220, 221, 222. 218 is a majority. So we're going to be looking at a 2-3-4 vote majority at best. The rage Americans are feeling across this country, the rage that I'm feeling, there are almost not words to describe it. Because this opportunity was screwed up. It was screwed up badly. And the people are going to pay the price, or the American people. The country is screwed for the next 4 years because of this. We're going to see horrible left-wing judges confirmed for the next 2 years because of this. We're going to see judges taking away our free speech rights, our religious liberty rights, our Second Amendment rights. It is an enormous missed opportunity, and I got to say it is hard to describe my feelings as anything other than rage right now.
Speaking on his podcast, Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz. Remember, whenever the Senate is in session, you can find it live on C-SPAN 2. You're listening to Washington Today. Welcome back to Washington Today. Here are some more of today's headlines. One of the more higher-profile 2022 races remains undecided. That's the race for governor in Arizona. With less than 10% of the estimated vote left to count, Democrat Katie Hobbs is still leading Republican Carrie Lake by just under 25,000 votes. And some election watchers are saying that Carrie Lake's path to victory is looking increasingly narrow. New York Times chief political analyst Nate Cohn tweeted on Sunday night's latest vote count, quote, "Lake didn't get the tallies she wanted and probably needed out of Maricopa. It will be presumably close further, but Lake doesn't have many batches left," making a reference to Arizona's most populous county, Maricopa County. And the Cook Political Report's Dave Wasserman also tweeted on Sunday evening that it's, quote, "extremely tough to see how Carrie Lake wins now." According to the Arizona Secretary of State's office, roughly 169,000 votes are left to count statewide. As of Monday afternoon, that means Carrie Lake would need about 57% of remaining ballots to pull off a victory. In a new interview, former Vice President Mike Pence said Donald Trump's words on social media during the January 6th Capitol attack were, quote, "reckless," and he criticized the former president for being, quote, "part of the problem on that day." We'll hear more from the former vice president coming up. And the United Nations Climate Change Summit continues in Egypt this week. Talks last week ended with another sharp warning from scientists, who said that global warming is already killing thousands of people each year and that death tolls will continue to rise without immediate sharp cuts in global warming pollution. Christy Ebbe, a public health researcher at the University of Washington and co-author of the new report, said the reported death toll is probably an underestimate. The report also said that scientific evidence shows that global warming impacts are outrunning the slow pace of negotiations aimed at slowing climate change. Back on Capitol Hill, control of the House of Representatives still up in the air as 19 congressional races are still undecided. And according to Politico, 10 of those are toss-ups. So far, Republicans have 212 seats to the Democrats' 203. 218 are needed to win the majority. And speaking in Indonesia, President Biden said Democrats are likely to come very close, but not keep control of the House once the races are all called.
What should Americans expect from Congress as it relates to abortion rights after the midterms?
I don't think they can expect much of anything other than we're going to maintain our positions. I'm not going to get into more questions. I shouldn't even answer your question. No, I don't think that. I don't think there's enough votes to codify unless something happens unusual in the House. I think we're going to get very close in the House, but I think it's going to be very close, but I don't think we're going to make it.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Should the Republicans take over the majority, current minority leader Kevin McCarthy is poised to become the House Speaker. And Fox News is reporting today that the House Freedom Caucus, that's the group of ultra-conservative members, is also poised to offer an alternative to Leader McCarthy's candidacy. One of those candidates, former Freedom Caucus chair Andy Biggs of Arizona. Congressman Britt Biggs, who has been subpoenaed by the House January 6th committee for his efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election, held a forum today on new House and Republican Party rules for the new Congress.
I believe that good process results more often in good policy than bad process does. And I hope that we'll be able to have a productive discussion and learn from the witnesses who are joining us today to share their expertise and their experience. Under current House rules, 430 of 435 members have no true opportunity to provide input into major legislation considered in the House of Representatives. Congress is the legislative branch, and we are elected by our constituents to be their voice in crafting, amending, and debating the policy of the nation. But the current autocratic, leadership-driven process robs us, and more importantly, our constituents, of the ability to participate meaningfully in the legislative process. Over the past 4 years, Speaker Pelosi has used the rules of the House of Representatives to further centralize power in the hands of leadership. House Democrats approved rules changes to give the Speaker same-day authority to pass legislation. They kicked Republicans off committees. They allowed proxy voting on the floor, virtual participation in hearings and markups, and installed magnetometers outside the House chamber, which are still in place at least as of this day. And while Republicans have rightly opposed the changes implemented by the Speaker, the consolidation of power in the hands of leadership is not a problem unique to a Democrat-led House. In fact, it was the Republican-led 115th Congress that set a record for the most bills considered in the House on the House floor with no amendments allowed. Good policy comes downstream from good process. And this week we have the opportunity to improve process in the House of Representatives. Structural reforms to Republican conference rules and House rules are necessary to ensure that members are empowered and engaged in the legislative process and to ensure that we can rein in both government spending and unaccountable government agencies.
Arizona Republican Representative Andy Biggs earlier today. You can see that entire event at cspan.org. House Democrats are also positioning their members for the new session, and Pramila Jayapal of Washington held a news conference to introduce new members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. That's the group she chairs. She also spoke to reporters.
You and also your Progressive Caucus members be able to support Speaker Pelosi if she does run for leadership in the Democratic Caucus? Well, you know, we always consider all the people who are running very carefully, and we usually have a set of things that we ask for as the Progressive Caucus as part of those negotiations, so we're looking forward to seeing what that looks like. Yes. I am so basking in the power of the progressive movement. That is what I am focused on, and delivering Georgia and continuing to get more progressive wins. Yes. Yes, we actually are having an executive board meeting tomorrow where we'll be talking about lame duck. I think that there are some really important pieces that we've already talked about. The debt ceiling is one that we have a letter with Brendan Boyle around making sure that the debt ceiling is not a tool that's used to pass other bad social policy or economic policy. So we'll need to get that done. We're looking at the, if there is going to be a tax extenders bill and there's a corporate tax in there, the R&D tax is extended, we want to make sure that the CTC is put back in place, because we know that the child tax credit cut poverty by 40%, cut hunger by 32%. That is the kind of relief that families want. If there is a possibility, I heard some discussion of a reconciliation bill also potentially including limited Medicaid expansion, really important in our southern states for black folks and brown folks in particular, poor folks across those states where, you know, extreme Republican governors have not expanded Medicaid. We need a way to bring those folks in, and that is obviously something that we would want to work on as well. We also hope that there's antitrust reform legislation. You heard the mention of immigration. I think we really need to get the DREAM Act, DREAM and Promise Act, across the finish line. So there are a number of things, but we'll put together our full agenda over the next week or so as we go into this lame duck session.
House Democrat Pramila Jayapal of Washington, she chairs the Congressional Progressive Caucus, speaking to reporters. Also at the event, new caucus member, Florida Representative-elect Maxwell Frost. He spoke about the shooting on Sunday evening at the University of Virginia, where three football players were killed and another two people were injured.
Yeah, well, one of my fellows, who actually goes to UVA, he worked on my campaign during the primary, he barricaded and had to run for his life in the library of UVA. I was just texting with him in the orientation, which just shows what gun violence does. It takes 100 lives a day. The leading cause of death for children went from automobile accidents to gun violence. And here's the thing, a similar thing happened to me. I got involved in this fight 10 years ago because of the Sandy Hook shooting. 3 years after I got involved in this fight, it would hit my hometown with Pulse, and 3 months after that, I'd become a survivor myself from a shooting that happened in downtown Orlando. So you never know when it's going to hit you. Unfortunately, it's impacting one of my fellows today, and you know, we're mourning the lives. I think it's three so far, this is why we need action on this issue.
Democratic Florida Representative-elect Maxwell Frost. And for more on where we are on the makeup of the House of Representatives, here's NBC News senior congressional reporter Scott Wong and Bloomberg News congressional reporter Eric Wasson.
What's going on with the House is things are still up in the air. We have not really been in a situation like this before, where nearly a week after the election, control over the House is still unknown. Now, there are about 19 to 20 seats that are still uncalled, at least by NBC's standards. And so a majority of those Democrats will need to carry in order to retain control of the House. It's a very tough feat for Democrats. Republicans only need a handful of those seats to flip the majority. But there's still a very narrow path for Democrats to retain the majority. This is not a situation that I think any of us anticipated just a week ago, that Democrats would be in a position to be able to retain control, because of what history has shown us, that usually the party in power controlling the White House, President Joe Biden's party, typically would lose dozens of seats in their first midterm election. And so this Democrats really have defied history here because of the slow count in California, where a lot of these uncalled races are. We may not know for days, perhaps even weeks.
Eric Wasson, on that same question, 19 races, according to the Associated Press, yet to be called. Are you getting a sense, though, that the momentum is for Republicans right now with the way these are falling out?
Well, I trust some of these pundits like David Wasserman of Cook Political Report, and he said Democrats would need a miracle at this point to retain it. It's still possible. Even the president himself said it would be an inside straight, you know, so it's just it's unlikely, but it's still possible. And, you know, it's striking that Scott and I were both at the McCarthy victory party on election night where he came out and said, by tomorrow morning, we will know we're in the majority. And many mornings, including this one, have since dawned, and we still don't know.
And tomorrow morning is going to dawn, and we're expecting House leadership elections. Take us through the latest on that. Is Kevin McCarthy going to see a challenge here?
Well, he may see a challenge. I'm thinking maybe someone like Andy Biggs from the House Freedom Caucus will stand up. But at this point, McCarthy only needs half of his caucus plus one. So his conference, actually, is the way that Republicans call their caucus. It's the real problem will be January 3rd when they come back. He needs 218 votes on the floor. So if it's a very tiny majority, we're looking at 220, according to Wasserman, for example. It only takes, you know, three people to bring him down. And that's where we could see some negotiating ahead of that, where he gives concessions to the Freedom Caucus and other conservatives. But also, we have to remember this empowers what used to be called the Tuesday Group. There are people who won in New York State. You know, for example, Tom Kaine, I covered his race in New Jersey, a moderate who squeaked in, who are not going to go along with, you know, a debt ceiling showdown with a lot of this impeachment talk. So McCarthy's going to have a very delicate balance getting the votes of both sides of his conference.
Scott Wong, on Republican leadership election this week, any chance the House and Senate ones get bumped? There's been some calls for that, right?
Well, conservatives, in the wake of this very disappointing outcome on Tuesday's election, are calling for delays in these leadership elections, both in the House and the Senate. And so, so far, Kevin McCarthy, Mitch McConnell, who really control the timing of these leadership elections, they have not bowed down to those demands. They are going full steam ahead. We are expecting a leadership candidate forum today for House Republicans, where Kevin McCarthy and others running for these leadership spots will stand before their fellow members and explain why they should be in leadership. And then, as you mentioned, tomorrow, House Republicans, Kevin McCarthy and others who are running for re-election or running for election to leadership will have those votes. On the Senate side, Mitch McConnell, we're expecting leadership elections Wednesday morning. And so these things are happening very fast. It's in McConnell and McCarthy's interest that these things move ahead very quickly. The longer there's delays, there perhaps could be some funny business being played by conservatives who may not want some of those leaders in those positions. So far, nobody has stepped forward to formally challenge McCarthy or McConnell, but there's a lot of murmurings behind the scenes. So we're watching that very closely.
And having those elections early helps to get the lame duck agenda going. For example, if McConnell still doesn't know if he's going to be leader, he can't start to figure out his strategy on this big $1.7 trillion spending bill that's going to come up in December. You know, getting himself locked in as a leader, he can start to cut deals, negotiate, form a negotiating position.
Is that pressure not there for Democrats then? Their leadership elections later in the month, right?
Yeah, well, Nancy Pelosi has continued to be very coy about her, you know, future. She did make sort of a deal with people saying this would have been her last term as party leaders. But, you know, we saw her on the Sunday show yesterday giving an indication she might try to stay on. And I think she's not going to make that decision until she knows whether the House has remained in Democratic hands. So, yeah, they are delaying it to early December. But I think for me, it's really McConnell's call on a lot of these lame duck bills. Democrats are going to want to push through a big spending bill. They're going to want to fund Ukraine. They're probably going to try to lift the debt ceiling. And it'll really be a McConnell call whether he has the support in his conference, especially among conservatives, to do any of that.
NBC News senior congressional correspondent Scott Wong and Eric Wasson, congressional correspondent for Bloomberg News, on today's Washington Journal. You can see the entire segment at cspan.org/Washington Journal. And finally today, former Vice President Mike Pence is speaking about the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Former Vice President was barricaded along with dozens of other lawmakers as rioters descended on the Capitol in an attempt to overturn the certification of Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 election. Here is the former Vice President.
Members were barricaded inside the House chamber. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of it all, you can see that the President has tweeted. 2:24 p.m., the president tweets, Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done.
It angered me. But I turned to my daughter, who was standing nearby, and I said, it doesn't take courage to break the law. It takes courage to uphold the law. I mean, the president's words were reckless. It was clear he decided to be part of the problem.
Over the course of several hours, you spoke with the acting defense secretary. You spoke with the joint chiefs of staff, General Milley.
I did.
You spoke with the acting attorney general, Jeff Rosen, with the chief of Capitol Police. Where was the president in all this?
David, I was at the Capitol. I wasn't at the White House.
And when you learned later that he was watching all this unfold on TV?
I can't account for what the president was doing that day. I was at a loading dock in the Capitol where a riot was taking place.
But why wasn't he making these calls?
That'd be a good question for him.
Former Vice President Mike Pence speaking with ABC World News Tonight anchor David Muir. Mike Pence has a new memoir coming out. In it, he writes that the January 6th rioters, quote, desecrated the seat of our democracy. He also described a post-election White House meeting, writing, quote, after the campaign, lawyers gave a sober and somewhat pessimistic report on the state of election challenges. The outside cast of characters went on the attack. Even in an office well acquainted with rough and tumble debates, it was a new low and went downhill from there. He goes on to write in the book, in the end, that day, the president made a fateful decision to put Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell in charge of the legal strategy. The seeds were being sown for a tragic day in January. The book is scheduled to be released tomorrow. If you missed any of this program, you can find it on our C-SPAN Now mobile app and at cspan.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like more on the stories that are shaping Washington, you can subscribe to C-SPAN's evening newsletter, Word for Word. Just go to cspan.org/connect to subscribe. I'm Gary Starikoff. Thanks a lot for listening today to Washington Today.